I'm Nana van Tolberg for BizNews. Well, the ANC conference at NASREC has concluded. I say concluded, but they're going to continue in January. President Ramaphosa seems to have tightened his grip on power. And I'm happy to have with me Nezo Sobekwa from S&P Global Market Intelligence. He is an African political risk specialist. Nezo, welcome to BizNews.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Linda. I'm happy to be here.
Well, I'd like to get your views on how investors view this. Mr. Ramaphosa's fortunes changed overnight.
It's been an interesting, very eventful and highly dramatic past couple of days. Well, I think that in the end, Ramaphosa prevailed against what was clear and a clear attempt to get him out of the seat of power, as everybody knows. I think that the RET faction within the ANC did its best in the last minute to find a candidate who would be credible, because up until that moment, they really didn't find one. And I think there were some last-minute negotiations. We saw on Sunday evening a shift of allegiances from Ramaphosa by a number of delegates, particularly in Mpumalanga and Limpopo. And that made it a really tight race, because whilst Ramaphosa came into it with over 2,000 votes, and his closest competitor with about 900 from the nominations headed to the conference, we saw that after the conference, that number was much closer. Those last-minute shifts made a significant difference, and the gap was, you know, less than 500 or so, as opposed to the 1,000, which was the gap that he came in with.
Well, there's quite a relief from many analysts that I see. The bond markets improved, the currency improved, but the big task starts now. I mean, what does this win mean for him and for investors looking at this?
Well, it's rather interesting, Linda. One is tempted to begin by saying that, of course, he's managed to consolidate some power. This should give him some room to be more aggressive in pursuing a couple of economic reforms that are really important from an investment perspective in the country. His biggest stumbling block is also one of his biggest allies, it would seem, in the National Executive Committee. The Minerals Minister Gwede Mantashe is also the returning chair of the ANC. Well, this means that within the ANC, he's a massive ally and has been able to ensure that Ramaphosa does, in fact, become elected so that he can run for the presidency in 2024. However, Gwede Mantashe is also the biggest coal supporter within the South African economy. And Ramaphosa is going to have to find a way to manage that. As we know, in a couple of instances, Ramaphosa and Mantashe have come out in the media and have said at times contrasting things. Ramaphosa has at least on one occasion pulled rank and shifted policy over his minerals minister. I do know that, for instance, the threshold for power generations for independence at some point was only 10 megawatts. And that's what Gwede Mantashe had announced. Less than 48 hours later, the president came on air and said, actually, I'm going to lift it up to 100 megawatts. And so we're likely going to see that kind of policy and consistency in the energy sector, which is very crucial for investment, continue, we think, over the next couple of months. It will be interesting to see once he gets to the elections and after the elections, if the ANC comes out victorious, whether or not Ramaphosa will shift his cabinet and perhaps move Gwede Mantashe to a different portfolio in order to open up the ability for him to move more aggressively in the energy sector. Notwithstanding that, of course, that very coal lobby that Gwede Mantashe supports so aggressively is a very important constituency for Ramaphosa, one that he doesn't want to alienate ahead of those elections. And so it's going to be quite a bit of negotiations, at least in the next 12 months, before we get to 2024, when I think Ramaphosa will be able to move more aggressively afterwards. Just one of the things that are likely to play out in that way in the next 12 months.
And you talked about a possible reshuffling of the cabinet. That's what everybody probably expects with more power. He might move out these negative forces of the RET faction that's been breaking him so far. Do you expect a major cabinet reshuffle in the new year?
Absolutely. In the first instance, after this conference, regional representation, particularly for KwaZulu-Natal, is clearly lacking in the new top seven of the National Executive Committee. And so he's going to have to find a way to extend an olive branch, if you will, to KwaZulu-Natal and in some ways get the likes of Senzo Mchunu and Mr. Ntuli into his cabinet in order to give KwaZulu-Natal some sort of power. KwaZulu-Natal, of course, is the biggest constituency within the ANC's branches, and he's going to need their support moving into 2024. And he's going to have to find creative ways to legitimize them after their defeat they suffered in this NEC. And so I foresee him giving them some important roles. And I think both in the party and perhaps in government. And so we might see some fresh KZN faces in government come 2024. Certainly, though, the likes of those who have been very vocal against Ramaphosa and, in fact, challenged his position for the presidency in this conference. I speak here to Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma. I speak here to Mrs. Sisulu Lindiwe. I certainly think that within his cabinet there have been voices of dissent that I foresee him dealing with rather aggressively from a cabinet point of view. I mean, both of them are in his cabinet. The one is actually the Minister of Corporate Governments. The other is the Minister of Tourism. I think she's shifted from water and sanitation. And so he needs to at least deal with those portfolios swiftly, I would argue.
Mr. Ramaphosa is known to be cautious, to move slowly. One of the delegates described how he walks, he doesn't run. And I think that's not what the business community wants to hear now. They might tell him, you have the mandate now, move it.
Yeah, I mean, this is what we will all like to see happen. And I think with him having less to lose, he should. He sounded like somebody who doesn't mind being disposable if need be. What I mean here is when the Section 89 panel came out and said that perhaps he's contravened the Constitution, he was the first to put up his hand and say, well, I'm happy to move out of the way if it means the reputation of the party will be saved. Him being able to do that speaks to somebody who does feel that he's in a position to negotiate less and that if you want him, you should have him. And I think what the NEC did in response was to say, actually, we do need you. All things equal, you're still the best shot for us to make sure we come out on top in 2024. And we're willing to stand behind you, something they were not willing to do for other members of the party. For instance, the health minister, who is yet to be found guilty, but based on the reputational damage to the party, when those allegations were made against him, was asked to step down. And so the change of tune where Ramaphosa's concern says to me that Ramaphosa has got some level of leverage with a much friendlier NEC than he had in 2017 at NESRAC. And so we are expecting to see a faster move of pace. We think that he'll be able to move around the chess pieces with a greater level of ease. We certainly think he's going to turn up the screws where corruption cases are concerned. The likes of the Zondo commissions are probably going to see some real implications come out of it now. This is not to say that he doesn't have some strategic decisions to still make. He's been a very cautious president, as you've noted. And of course, I think the reason for that has been that he's had to negotiate his way into coming into the second term. We've yet to see in the past three leaders of the ANC somebody who finishes a second term. From Thabo Mbeki to President Zuma, they have not finished their terms. And I think he's wanted to make sure that he could consolidate enough power to at least finish his term. He's been aggressive on the investment front. He's made a lot of pledges. In fact, he's been so bold that even in the energy sector, he's been willing to lose some seriously important infrastructure. And here, I mean, for instance, the oil refineries. He's not budged in terms of the regulations in order to align with the conditions for the billions that he's been able to secure for just energy transition. And so I think he's going to want to honor that. As far as the business world is concerned. And yeah, I do think he's got more room. And so, yeah, we all want to see him move swiftly. And I guess what I'm saying is the biggest stumbling block's out of the way and he's got greater leverage. And we'll see if the Buffalo can just gain some more momentum.
The other problem he has is there's an election coming up in 2024, and the polls don't look good for the ANC. So if he doesn't speed it up, could that affect how the ANC does in the polls, or would corruption catch up with them? There was a line in his speech: "We have no choice to deal with corruption, or we will perish as an organization." So do you think that that might also speed him up? The fact that this election is looming, the opposition is literally rubbing their hands together, not that they united.
Well, you make a very good point right at the tail end there. The opposition is not united. And all of the reversals that came out of the local government coalitions are testament to that. We've seen the reversal of coalition governments where opposition had thwarted the ANC in Johannesburg. We saw this come and done in Ekurhuleni. We saw it come and done in Tshwane. And so, indeed, a weak opposition is unlikely going to be a massive threat. Really, the ANC's biggest threat are its own voters and whether or not they really do believe that Ramaphosa is going to be able to do what they need him to do. And that will mean whether or not ANC people are going to come out in their numbers. This is what will really hurt them and give any sort of leverage to the opposition. Corruption, as you've pointed out, was the ticket that Ramaphosa came in on. And if we're being fair to the man, as slow as it's been, he's the first ANC president to ever implement a resolution by the party to get rid of corruption in the manner that he did. This resolution came out before at the 2017 Lazarus election and was not implemented because of his need to try and ensure that he can consolidate power. But as he's been able to do so, he has in fact implemented the anti-corruption mechanisms within the party. People have stepped aside. I don't think we've seen senior members of the government being moved out of their positions this aggressively and with this much punity. And so Ramaphosa has really kept his word where that's concerned. I don't think that the cost is something we're happy about. The Zondo Commission has cost taxpayers too much money, and we've yet to see investigations come out of that. But he has followed up on it nonetheless, and those who are corrupt and at least have got charges against them are not standing for office and have stepped aside, and he's found replacements for them, no matter how long it's taken. And so he's right. He doesn't have a choice. That's the ticket he's going to go into 2024 with. And he needs to show that his mouth is where his money is. No puns intended, considering Pala-Pala, we know his money is under a sofa. But he's going to have to show that in the next 12 months. And I think that will gain some sort of confidence for those who are outside of the ANC and are not as loyal to its leaders as those who are inside the ANC are. And this might, in fact, begin to get people to come and vote. It would be based on that, his ability to be convincing about anti-corruption in the next 12 months. Yeah.
Well, your job, basically, is to tell people of the political risk of investing in regions, which is, and this, your region now is South Africa. What would you say to investors now? Does the picture look different? And also, I think we're very much interested, because it's S&P Global, in the credit rating of the country. Do you think anything would change after Ramaphosa's quite strong lead that he now has in the ANC?
Well, let's be cautiously optimistic. South Africa's got some really structural problems. Electricity is not one that's going to go away in the next year. Capacity for the country to generate electricity in an effective way is a very, very big problem. We've seen unprecedented levels of load shedding. I think in 2022, we've seen more hours of load shedding than we've seen in the past 2 years put together. We also have now begun to experience water shortages due to infrastructure insufficiencies at the local municipal level. This is not to say that South Africa, though it is an arid, a semi-arid country with very low levels of rainfall compared to the rest of the world, this is not to say that its capacity to capture whatever rainfall it does has is not sufficient. In fact, it is very sufficient, and we've seen better levels of water reservoirs, but there's just too much leakages between those storage facilities and the tap, and too much leakages between those storage facilities and the major industries that need them, in manufacturing, in agriculture, and even in the IT industry with the data centers that have begun to open up all over the country. And so the electricity shortages and water shortages is a big concern from an investment point of view. And we think that Ramaphosa has got more leeway, at least in the Eskom part of things, to be more aggressive. But again, this is not going to turn around in the next 12 months and far beyond the next 24 months. We just saw the CEO, in fact, of Eskom, Andrea de Reit, resign just a few days before the conference, or if not concurrently with the conference, which is a concern. And then, of course, the fact that South Africa is no longer refining its own fuel means that it's more reliant on imported fuel, at least for 60% of its needs, which is a sharp increase over the past 24 months when it needed far less imports. This opens South Africa up to vulnerabilities on, you know, supply chain disruptions, operational disruptions. We saw in June the fact that a fuel tanker was delayed at sea for 2 weeks, translated to jet fuel shortages at Cape Town and in the capital commercial city of Tshwane and Johannesburg. And this, of course, resulted in the cancellation of flights, a big knock to tourism. But it also meant that on the ground, cargo was delayed. We also saw that, Transnet, which is the main transport entity of the government, suffered a number of breaches and sabotage attempts. And so, I mean, those are some serious issues that Ramaphosa now has to deal with. We've got a very disciplined treasury. We've got a very disciplined central bank. From an inflationary point of view, from a currency exchange point of view, I think we're doing pretty well. But we've got some structural issues that Ramaphosa has got more power to kind of deal with now. And he needs to hit the ground running. So no, not in the short term. Things are not going to turn around quickly from an investment positive perspective. But certainly it is far more, optimistic than it was before this conference, especially from a corruption point of view, which would have meant slower delivery from a governance point of view. We think we're going to see more delivery from a governance point of view moving forward.
Nezo Sebekwa from S&P Global, thank you so much and best wishes for the season.
Thank you so much, Linda. Thank you also to your listeners. Have a good one.
I'm Linda von Tolberg for biznews.com.